The push for criminal justice reform in Arizona mirrors much of the rest of the country, with a bipartisan effort and some unexpected allies, such as the ACLU and the Koch Network. There were expectations for progress in the 2019 legislative session, but some advocates say that was dashed by opposition, including from former Maricopa County Attorney Bill Montgomery. With Montgomery now an Arizona Supreme Court Justice, there's a degree of renewed optimism at the Capitol, with bills sponsored by Representative Walt Blackmun and Senator J.D. Mesnard. Grover Norquist, best known for his stand against taxes, is in the Valley tonight to talk about criminal justice reform. I caught up with him earlier and asked about Arizona's attempts at reform.
I'm right now in Florida, where they did this, getting better data collection and more transparency in the criminal justice system. Because when people announce, oh, we have very high or very low recidivism rate, it's not clear what they include. Do they only include state crimes when you're dealing with state issues, or do they include people who got arrested repeatedly and did jail time as recidivism? So getting the better data, then you know whether new ideas are making things better or worse, how big a problem is. Getting the best possible information on how defendants plea, how many trials took place, and then looking at the various sentencing. Civil asset forfeiture. A number of states have moved forward on that. This right now, civil asset forfeiture allows the police come and to say, we've stopped your car. We think you've committed a crime. We think your car was involved in that crime. We take it. This comes from when you used to grab ships because you thought they were pirate ships. it's that law that went through the years. Ships don't commit crimes. Cars don't commit crimes. People do. But the real problem with civil asset forfeiture is you don't have to be convicted of bank robbery to have your car that you used for the bank robbery to be taken. They can take it and then not charge you. And then in many cases, you have to go get a lawyer to get back a car. Some states have said civil asset forfeiture only if it's more than $50,000. That stops the police from taking $100 from somebody. You're not going to go to court and hire a lawyer to get $100 back or $1,000 back, or a clunker of a car that's worth $2,000.
Now, is that why this has become bipartisan? Because I'll just use a couple of examples of the strange bedfellows, ACLU and the Koch Network, which on most issues they would not agree they do on this. When did this momentum start, and what are the reasons behind it?
A number of things happened. You had much higher rates of incarceration, particularly for drug crimes, and you had mandatory minimums, which were politicians saying, we really, really don't like something. 45 years. I testified in Congress to equalize the treatment of powder cocaine and crack cocaine. It was 100-to-1 ratio. It was 100-to-1 ratio because the Black Caucus in the House demanded that years ago in the 80s because they thought their communities were being decimated. And they wanted that high ratio. Then later, when they looked at what they'd done, they said, this is not a good idea. And they were willing to change it. And conservatives didn't want to leave people in prison for many, many years. Among other things, it's expensive. Families are destroyed. Neighborhoods are damaged when you take parents and fathers out of the community. And this is good bipartisanship. When principled conservatives and principled progressives want to do the same thing, perhaps for different reasons. Bad bipartisanship is when conservatives say, I'd be willing to do something stupid and destructive if I got my good bit in. And the progressive says, I'm willing to do something stupid and destructive if I got my good bit in. They both pass the bill that they both don't actually want to pass and don't like the whole thing. They just got a piece of it. I much prefer when the Venn diagram works, that progressives and conservatives say, you know what? We agree on this sum, not everything, but civil asset forfeiture, the government confiscating a car or cash because they think you might have been involved in a crime and the property might have been part of that crime. And with no conviction, your stuff gets taken. The ACLU opposes that. Every conservative I know opposes that. Let's get together and get rid of it.
Let's turn to what you're better known for nationally, and that is your opposition to taxes. You had candidates sign a no-tax pledge over the course of the years. So President Trump, let's talk about his tax policy. You're a fan of the tax cuts he signed into law in 2019, but also there were new taxes created, at least temporarily, via his fights with China. How do you reconcile those? Because obviously tariffs are taxes.
Well, tariffs are taxes. For 100 years in American history, the major taxes raised by the federal government were tariffs, really. That they sold land to people who were moving west and had tariffs. The country almost fell apart in the 1830s over tariffs. Before slavery was a problem, tariffs were dividing the country. Tariffs are always a challenge. I understand the president's frustration. How do you get the Chinese to agree to reasonable terms on trade when he discovers that there are trade agreements that somebody else agreed to years ago and they were always flawed or became flawed over time? How do you renegotiate those? Tariffs are a tool you can use to beat the other guy on the head to get him to perhaps agree. But tariffs are taxes paid by Americans. They're not tariffs paid by Chinese people when they sell us stuff, paid by Americans.
Let me close out with a question about deficits. As taxes have been cut, the federal deficit is rising. That used to be a concern of folks, especially those on the more conservative side. Why is that not emphasized more by more elected officials?
Well, there is a challenge, and that's total spending. The cost of government is total spending. How much they take in taxes, how much they borrow, that is, does not affect economic growth. What we need is to have more growth in order to bring down the deficit and to get more revenue in. Total revenue in the government's increasing. It's just that spending is increasing faster. We need to focus on not increasing spending faster than revenue is increasing.
That is Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. He's in Phoenix tonight to talk about criminal justice reform in Arizona. He's being hosted by Americans for Prosperity of Arizona. Grover Norquist, thanks for the time today.
Good to be with you.